This episode is brought to you by Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a new podcast, Scene on the Screen, presented by Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley is available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hello, I'm Kendra Winchester, Hiwasachi Argerbright, and this is Reading Women, a podcast inviting you to reclaim half the bookshelf by discussing books written by or about women. And this is episode 60, where we're talking about the second episode in our love and romance theme. We're going to be talking about today An American Marriage by Terry Jones and First Comes Marriage by Huda Al-Murashi. Yeah, so I'm so excited to talk about these two books.
Me too. I feel like both are similar, but also very different. So I'm excited to talk about some of those aspects of both books.
Yes. And I didn't realize until we were writing the copy and making notes this episode that they both have marriage in the title.
Yes, right? How perfect is that?
And I think the subtitle of First Comes Marriage is something like My Not-So-American Love Story.
I think you're right. They're like mirrors of each other.
Yes.
Or reflections.
Yes. And we have something for both fiction lovers and nonfiction lovers alike.
Yes.
So we have everything together. But before we jump into discussing those books more in depth, we do want to talk a little bit about romance versus love stories.
All right. This is educational for me too, because as we said in the last episode, we're both kind of romance novices. So if you're right there with us, listeners, then we can all kind of learn together.
Yes. And I have been talking to Agata, and like I mentioned last episode, she is an amazing romance recommender. And so she pretty much, you can just put keywords and send them to her and she will have a romance for you.
That is awesome.
I told her she needs to have a romance service. Like,
yay.
It is phenomenal. So she is recommending several books for us, and that post went up on Valentine's Day. So you can go check that out. And so I've been talking with her. So, and working with definitions with her. So thank you so much to Agata for helping me out and sending me so many recommendations. So I think the fundamental question that a lot of people have is, what is exactly a romance novel? And to answer your question, it is not 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh my gosh.
So
good clarification.
Yes. Like, we just need to just put that out there, answer everyone's unspoken question. But a romance novel is a novel, first off, with a happy ending. Obviously, it's love between two people. But it can have a wide range of what we're going to call the spectrum of sexy times. So it can be anything from an inspirational romance novel, like the Amish romance novels that my mom loves, to something closer to erotica. Now, when you get into erotica, I think there's some like subgenre where it doesn't have a happy ending, but we're just going to separate that to its own little thing. Whatever you prefer, whatever your preference, there is something there for you. There's like paranormal romance, there's historical romance, there's almost anything you can imagine, really.
Paranormal romance? That sounds very interesting.
Yes, they're shapeshifters.
What?
Yes.
I was thinking like ghostly stuff. I don't know if that's
I'm
right.
I'm sure there's that too.
like the shows like the Ghost Hunters, but with romance.
Oh, I always think of like Supernatural with the Winchesters.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, I'm sure
which you probably identify with because your last name is Winchester.
Yes. True story. First family outing with my husband's family, the Winchesters, was to the Winchester Mystery House.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. My father-in-law took out his ID and was like, I really am a Winchester.
Oh my gosh. That's such a fun like thing like a dad would do.
Yes. It was very, very Mr. Winchester. So you can't make that stuff up.
Oh, I love it. I need to explore some of these subgenres within romance. I'm like very jazzed about this.
There are. And like Bree mentioned in last episode, like she struggles with historical romance as, you know, a black woman because like it's not really a great time.
Right.
You know? So people like Beverly Jenkins are writing these amazing historical romance novels featuring African-American protagonists. And it features, you know, topics on social justice. And there's a wide range. You, whatever your preferences, flavors, whatever story you want, it is there for you.
I love that.
I've been so impressed learning more about the romance genre. Like, I've been so delighted how amazing romance is. And I believe what we were talking about the other day, the documentary Love Between the Covers.
Yes, you were telling me about that.
Yeah, so it was recommended to me first by Lisa Cross Smith.
Oh, okay.
So we were talking to her after we interviewed her, and she was like, you should go check out this documentary. It's amazing. And so it talks about how not just that how romance keeps the lights on for publishing, but that it's also such a diverse and, you know, a genre that's tackling important topics and gives women a way to support themselves and just all the multifaceted nature of the romance world.
Yeah, I feel like it sounds like romance definitely is very diverse and giving a really great outlet for female voices.
Like, there's something for everyone out there. And, you know, Agata was telling me that she truly believes there's a romance novel for everyone out there. You just haven't found it yet.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good way of putting it.
And that's what I tell people about books when I try to convert people to the ways of reading.
Obviously, we got to convert as many people as we can.
You know, spreading the good news out there about the amazingness of literature. And so I was like thinking about that. And so, again, many thanks to Agata for talking to me about this really in-depthly and taking the time. Today, we are focusing on love stories. So these are what we're calling like gateway books so that you can get into the love story idea and it'll help you progress that direction towards romances if you're like us and this is new for you. So yeah, really excited to talk about them. And Sachi, you have the first discussion book.
Yep. So as we kind of previewed in last week's episode, I'll be talking about An American Marriage by Tayari Jones, and that's from Algonquin Books. And just a brief synopsis, we're talking about these Southern newlyweds who are unfortunately ripped apart by a prison sentence for a crime that the husband, Roy, didn't commit. And as the years go by and the wife, Celestial, is kind of very unsettled and upset by the fact that Roy and her were separated so early in their marriage. She looks for comfort through her childhood friend and the best man at their wedding, Andre, for support. And it turns into this kind of tangled love story, almost like a triangle between these three individuals. And you can kind of see their ups and downs and all the situations they're faced with that are beyond their control a little bit.
Yeah. And like I said in the last episode, I really actually enjoyed this love triangle, and because it was so, I don't know, character driven, maybe.
Yes. I feel like it's very character driven. Like, even though the plot spans a lot of time and a lot of things do happen, it's really because it's a direct result of the characters, and they're the ones that are really pushing the story along. And the story is very much focused on their character arcs over time, and you can really see how they change and how each of their decisions really affects all three of them. And you can kind of see each person's perspective to everything that's happening based off of what, you know, the other folks in the relationship are doing.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about it, and I hadn't really thought of this before, but I was reading a review by Jacqueline, one of our other contributors, and she was saying that some people say they're Team Roy or Team Andre.
Yes.
That she's Team Celestial. And I was like, yes. Good. Yes. Why did I like not think of this before? But it was like, obviously, like, it is very much about Celestial finding her place as an artist, as a woman, as a businesswoman, entrepreneur, all of these things, but also how her relationships with these two men have affected her life.
Yeah, very much. Like, that was actually one of my notes that I had on here to discuss about just how polarizing this book is too. Similar to you, I read this, I think it was last February, so around this time last year, I think it was a book of month. It was one of my book of the month picks, and it was before I had Bookstagram. And I have a couple in like in real life friends that read, but I didn't really have a lot of people to talk about like or talk to about this book. And then after I joined Bookstagram in the summer, I was just kind of looking up different accounts, and I found Reggie's account. He's at Reggie Reads, and he had this whole really long post that was really interesting about how he was Team Roy. And I was like, Team Roy? Oh, Team Roy, Team Andre? Like, I didn't know this was a thing. And then I like feverishly am searching like hashtags of like different things and like seeing what people's like kind of arguments were for each side. And I thought it was fascinating that some people like, you know, are very much on one side versus the other, and that the emotions that people or emotional reactions that people had were very intense for some of these conversations. And I think that's just a real testament to Tayari Jones' writing style, that she can really provoke these very polarizing emotions from a wide audience. And even though, you know, I didn't specifically favor one character over the other, I was able to understand the motivations of each character through the various POVs. And you know, to be honest, every character is flawed in their own way. I'm not going to go over spoilers, but there are numerous points in the book where I was thinking, what are they doing? So I didn't drift. I felt like each one had really good motivations, but each one I was like, I did not agree with some of the stuff they were doing. But to get such a different reaction from so many people, I think makes a book so interesting and makes me like very eager to discuss it with people. I know we can't do spoilers here. If you read this book based off this episode and you need someone to talk to, you can message me and we can talk about it because it's such a fun book to talk about because it is very twisty turny and there are a lot of things that you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. And I feel like some of the characters, they're not always super likable. So if you're a person who doesn't like unlikable characters, this might not be the book for you. But I tell people that American Marriage is like Whiskey and Ribbons if the three characters made more mistakes and they are more flawed. Oh, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem that way? I'm like, it does. When people say like, oh, I loved An American Marriage, I'm like, well, if you want like the happy version of An American Marriage, check out Whiskey and Ribbons because it's incredible. And then if people say I love Whiskey and Ribbons, and I was like, well, if you want more drama and more like kind of flawed characters, check out An American Marriage. I feel like they're going to go well together because they're both love triangles in very different tones and ways. But I personally, I feel that having unlikable or flawed characters just makes the story more realistic because no one in the world is perfect and not everyone in the world is likable, as probably all of us know very well. And I think it's good to have characters that make your blood boil sometimes because that's just like that's life. And I think that's really cool when an author can really capture that on a page.
Yeah. And I remember, like, I read An American Marriage and Sing and Buried Sing by Desmond Ward around the same time, and they deal with the incarceration of Black men in the South.
Yes.
You know, when you read two books that have similar topics, you always compare them just as a intellectual exercise. In both stories, there are women waiting for men who have been incarcerated.
Yes. I think I had a note in here as well just about, I really loved and enjoyed how the book turned attention to our very unjust and very broken criminal justice system and how, yes, it doesn't only kind of break the lives of the people who are incarcerated, but all of their family members are affected as well. It's like you're not only punishing one individual, you're punishing so many of their loved ones as well. And, you know, in this case for An American Marriage, Roy was in the wrong place at the wrong time, but you know, he was really penalized for it because of the color of his skin. And you see all of the repercussions and the ripple effect of that inherent kind of racism that is experienced by this couple and how it really changes their lives. And I felt like setting this up as the premise at the beginning of the novel was a really bold choice. And I really appreciated Tayari Jones' execution of this and that she wanted to focus this in the center of the story and really bring to light that, you know, these people who are imprisoned are not only suffering, it's everyone around them as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, celestial, the waiting woman on a husband who is far away has been a trope that we've had in literature for almost like the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. So you have Penelope in the Odyssey, the Iliad, that story where she's waiting for Odysseus.
Right.
And I kept thinking, being, you know, a classic lover, I kept thinking about that and how I was always so mad that, like, Odysseus just assumed that she would wait for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the complications of that assumption versus their love and their marriage, what was going on with that. And so Celestial is in a similar situation where, you know, her husband, for all she knows, is going to be in there for the majority of his life. She has to wait. Is she going to wait for him? Is she not? And it's a similar situation. And I feel like Terry Jones is a much more contemporary interpretation mm-hmm. of that. But also there's complications, obviously, of America, criminal justice system, et cetera. But it's a very interesting, I guess, trope of women waiting for men. But she takes a totally fresh perspective on it.
It is like, to your point about Odysseus, it's almost like the female character is only to become an accessory of the male protagonist. And it's just an assumption made that, oh yeah, you know, this is the viewpoint and the stereotype that we have for women. And they're just, you know, when the man goes away, they're supposed to, you know, kind of sit there dutifully and wait and be extremely excited when they come home. And it's just, I think in this case, in American Marriage, you get Celestial's thoughts throughout the process. And she herself, she talks about how she is a very independent person and is very strong-willed and kind of stubborn, and like how that clashes with, you know, the fact that she wants to be her own person and have her own career, but she's still also tied to Roy through this marriage where they can't be apart. And it really kind of deteriorates even further from, like you said, their kind of rocky start that is very kind of evident in the very first chapters. You can kind of tell that things are not going too well, and they've only been married, I think, for a year at that point. So it is a really, really, in my opinion, a very thought-provoking work of contemporary fiction on, yes, a trope that has been around for a very long time.
You know, I really appreciate how she also tackles, like, Roy's assumptions. So, like, that his wife will wait for him. And also, he mm-hmm. was the executive, and they were kind of driven by his career. But then
right.
once he was in prison, Celestial's art, making these very beautiful dolls, mm-hmm. takes off. She gets a storefront. Like, all this stuff happens for her. And mm-hmm. it's like he still expects her to drop everything for him.
Right.
And this is something that she will, and her, like, push back against that. And then you just throw Andre into the mix, and it's like your blender explodes. Like, it can't.
Yeah, too many layers. It's too much going on. But it does add for a lot of kind of drama and what will happen next and what is this person going to react to, all this stuff that's happening in the background. There's a lot of really good layering, too. Like, you kind of see one side, and then you're not going to see that person's reaction for a couple chapters. So it kind of like stews in your mind a little bit, like, oh no, like, you know, Roy's doing this, but meanwhile, you know, Celestial's doing this. How is he going to react to that? And then you see the reaction, and it's almost kind of like watching like a television show or like a long series or something. And it's just very well thought out and just really well woven together as well.
Yeah. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the structure of this book, how there's this introduction where we meet them, they're married, it's their first year anniversary, you know, he gets falsely accused. But once he's in prison, it switched to an epistolary.
Oh, yes, that's very structure. True. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's, you view their relationship over the course of several years via their letters to each other, because
yes.
that's one of the only ways they can communicate. Since he's in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember when I picked this book up, I read straight through all the way through the end of the letters. Like, I needed to know what happened.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like you have to know what happens. Like, what's going to happen to this relationship? You're immediately invested.
Yeah. And I'm a sucker for that writing style. Like, I love reading people's letters. I feel like, so when my parents, you know, they met when my dad was in the military, and when we were younger, my dad would go overseas and we wouldn't see him for like months at a time. It was usually like 6 months home and then 6 months away. And for the before email. So some of our younger listeners was like, when was there a time that there wasn't email? but before email, we would write letters to my dad. Obviously it was like, it's snail mail, especially like out into the, you know, all these different international countries and the sea. It would take a long time. And I really enjoyed getting a letter from my dad, and I would read a lot of the previous ones kind of like sandwiched or stacked on top of each other, just to like kind of feel like I was talking to him all the time and telling him what was going on. And whenever I see a book that really features a lot of letters over a long span of time, it just kind of reminds me of my childhood a little bit, and I get nostalgic about it a little bit, and I have to read them, yeah, to your point, like all at once, just to get that insight of what's going to happen next, because you can span a very large chunk of time just with letters, because of the longer nature of delivery for it. So I was really excited to see that section because it really reminded me of when I was younger.
I just feel like letters themselves, like you can see them writing, like you see their handwriting. It's way more personal, you know, and I feel like epistolary is something that style in novels is evolving to email and text messages. And it's just a beautiful way for literature to evolve and grow in different things. So there's a huge topic there we could discuss, but I feel like we just don't have the time.
It's another theme that we can chalk up for the future. Epistolary novels.
That would be a great theme.
Yeah, I would.
I'm going to write this down.
chalk it up for the future, because I feel like there's a lot of really good, like I read Dear Martin by Nick Stone last year, and he writes letters to Martin Luther King. It's more like a journal, but it's very much written in letter form. And I really enjoyed, he would have a letter and then something that would happen, you know, go back to kind of the narrative of his life, and then something would happen and he would immediately go back and he's like, I need to write a letter about this. And so it's kind of on and off between letter and narrative. And I felt like the way that Nick Stone wove the two together, and really you gain the main character's name is Justice. You get his inner thoughts as well as, you know, how outwardly he reacts and acts out in the world. And it was so well done. And again, I was just loving all the letters and journaling going on, but I feel like there's a theme there. I feel like we could do something with that. All right. So that was our first discussion pick, An American Marriage by Tayari Jones, and that's out by Algonquin.
And we'll be back with our next discussion pick after a word from our sponsor. So the sponsor of this week's episode of Reading Women is us.
Yes, we are so thankful for our patrons. Many of you have been with us from the very beginning supporting this podcast, and not only has it helped make this podcast possible, but also we have loved getting to know so many of you, our biggest fans who support this podcast.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things about having a Patreon is that we can develop closer relationships with you all, and we can have discussions about different things about the podcast. Often we will put polls up on our Patreon page, and then our patrons will give us feedback on things they like, things they didn't like, things they'd like to see in the future. And one of those things is we have a Patreon book club.
Yes, so we have a quarterly book club where the patrons get to vote on what book they would like to read and discuss, and then we have a live hangout, a Google Hangout right now, where we all get together and talk about it, and it's a lot of fun.
And we're always looking to add new things for our patrons. So, for example, recently we added our patrons to our close friends feature over on Instagram. So we will put special stories into our little feed there, and it is available to our patrons because of this cool new feature that Instagram has put up. So today I was showing them like how I edit the podcast and what that looks like.
We'll probably end up sharing, I don't know, just little behind the scenes things of like what we're reading or what we're doing. So be sure to check that out. And there are different levels that accommodate all kinds of budgets and needs. So ranging from $1 all the way up to $50. So be sure to go and check that out. And as a patron, not only are you helping spread the word about women writers, but you're also helping us keep the lights on, as it were, with this podcast.
and we greatly appreciate all of your support. And as we mentioned earlier, we would not be able to do this without you all. So if you would like to become a patron of Reading Women, go to patreon.com/readingwomen and you'll be able to find us there, or you can check out the link, which will be in the show notes.
So I think the next pick that we have is your discussion pick, Kendra. What is the book that you selected?
So I picked First Comes Marriage, My Not-So-American Love Story by Huda El-Marashi, and this is out from Prometheus Books. And this is the memoir of an Iraqi-American woman's journey with her arranged marriage. And so she is a practicing Muslim. She grew up Muslim. And so she had an arranged marriage, but it was different than her parents. So her mom agreed to marry her dad sight unseen, and he was much older than her. So she always told herself she didn't want to have that kind of marriage, but she did have an arranged marriage, but she knew him since she was a kid. I really appreciated how this book kind of interacted with that difference.
Definitely. And her husband's name is Hadi, correct?
Yes.
Yes. And I found it very interesting that, you know, she felt very different about her arranged marriage because she had known him for so long. As they got more serious about, you know, potentially becoming married and they get to know each other a little more, she realizes even though they grew up in the same community and they knew each other since childhood, there was still so much to learn about him, which I found really, really interesting. And it really kind of spins courtship kind of on its head because, you know, normally, at least like with my marriage, like I had known the person that I was going to marry for many years because we had this really deep friendship. But in this case, you know, she knows him, but she doesn't all the way know him. And discovering that was really just very exciting for her, which I kind of felt like that excitement to learn more about Hadi as well as she was throughout the story.
Yeah. And, you know, I grew up in a more conservative community. And so while my husband and I did not use courtship as our model, we have relatives who did. Mm. And so we were directly involved in that process because, you know, in her arranged marriage, like the families got together, they were very involved in this whole process. Oh. And that is very similar to what happened in my extended family. And so seeing that work out, even though we practice totally different religions,
yeah.
I was like, yes, chaperones, aren't they annoying? Like, yes, everyone has an opinion about your choice of the person that you're dating or courting or whatever your preferred term.
Right.
And I was like, related so much to a lot of what the topics Lakuta talks about in her memoir. And I was just like, this is the book that I have waited for my entire life. Like, I felt so connected to this book, even, and I feel like these principles are things that are universal, that a lot of people who practice conservative religions or just a conservative lifestyle might relate to mm-hmm. in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I had no kind of exposure to an arranged marriage or kind of families being involved in marriage choices. And it was a really interesting experience to learn just more about it. But it's really cool to hear about kind of your connection to it as well.
One of the things I really appreciated was how Huda talks about a lot of like her interaction, not just with her religion, but the way her parents interpreted the religion and practice versus her interpretation of her parents. And it's almost like telephone.
Mm-hmm.
And how she realized that, you know, like all adult, you know, young adults have to realize their parents aren't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of religion, they are your spiritual mentors, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, my parents might have gotten this part of my religion wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And having to accept that and process that was very much part of this book because she had made a lot of assumptions about her religion and how that would affect her marriage
mm-hmm.
and how that was actually wrong.
Yeah, I also found it interesting. I won't go into more detail for spoiler reasons, but towards the end of the book, she discusses or kind of like looks back on the early parts of her life and when she was kind of contemplating who she wanted to marry. She discusses how some of the comments and advice that she got from family members, she took kind of more literally than what family members were intending for some of that advice to be. And it, you know, just surprised, you know, her when she was kind of saying, well, I made this choice because, you know, our family said this, and they were like, oh, well, we weren't really being as serious when we said that as seriously as she took it, I think. And how crazy that is, that, you know, when you're that young and so impressionable and you're really hanging on these mentors to make these key life decisions, how sometimes stuff does get lost in translation. You are playing this kind of telephone with your family because they're really shaping your interpretation. And I thought that self-reflection towards the end of the book was really insightful.
Definitely. And, you know, you and I were talking about this before we started recording, and we both were very frustrated with Huda and Hadi. Some of the things I'm just like wanting to shake both of them. Like, what are you doing?
I know.
But then I remember the like 20 and 22 when they get married. And I'm oh, right. Right. I mean, I got married when I was 23 and I was very stupid, but very much in love. I don't regret a thing, but I'm like, yeah, I was so stupid. And I feel like you can almost hear like a smidgen of tone. Like, yes, I was young. And I was very stupid, and I had romanticized ideas of what marriage would be like.
Yeah, and she does talk a lot about her expectations and how they were very much, I think, through rose-colored glasses, and how her expectations were a little bit skewed, and that I feel like really shows in the book. But I really appreciated how honest she was about it, because it could be really easy to kind of gloss over some of those early years and just say like, oh, I didn't know what I was doing or anything. I feel like she was very, at least not knowing anything about her, I feel like she gave a really kind of detailed and accurate representation of some of those mistakes that she made and how it really affected her relationship. And yeah, even though sometimes I very much just wanted to be like, what are you doing to both of them? And saying like, you could handle this so much differently. I really liked that, you know, she created or she wrote this story and said, you know, it's okay if I'm not the most, you know, likable, because everybody makes these mistakes. And I really appreciate that honesty, because if I were to write a memoir and like putting my whole life out there, it'd be very difficult to say, you know, I think some of the things that I did when I was younger and be like, ugh, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah. And I think oftentimes, you know, when we look back and we're younger, you know, our feelings were still there. Like they're still valid, I guess. There's still things that need to be addressed. It's still genuine, right? Feelings. Mm-hmm. So even if they're coming from a place that is from a misconception, there's still something that she had to deal with. And I appreciated, like, when they were first married, she was very much an academic. She, while her husband was in between med school and his undergrad, she finished mm-hmm. her undergrad degree in, like, you know, 2 years and almost a year, basically.
Right.
And she was very, you know, he was very attentive with household work and different things. But then when he went to med school and she was following him, she was like, no, I don't want to fold the laundry this way. Like,
yeah.
I still remember her talking about socks, like how you shouldn't ball socks because the elastic. And I was like,
oh,
that's why you do that. Like,
I forgot about that part.
You could see where, you know, Holly was putting in the effort in some ways, and then she wasn't. But then there's also situations where it's vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
There's this quote that I read in an interview that Huda gave, and she says, talking about this idea of likable, that the interviewer is saying, I admire your willingness to really reveal yourself, to make yourself real before likable. And Huda responds with this paragraph, and at the end it says, and I think being loving doesn't mean you paint someone glowingly. Mm. Rather, you render them alive and fully human.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
And I really appreciate that, because Huda is a young woman, a very ambitious young woman.
Yes.
But also a very devout woman who wants to do best by her community, her parents, her God, and what she believes is right for her life. Mm-hmm. And those two, I feel like there's a tension.
Yes.
There in conflict throughout the book.
Definitely. I felt like there was a lot of internal struggle that she expresses. You kind of get some of her thoughts, obviously, and you can see how they influence her decisions and the way that she acts to other people. But there is that kind of internal struggle between being committed to the marriage, but also wanting to chase her dreams and her aspirations. And I felt like that was really, you know, very insightful to show. And she really tries to find the best balance of, you know, how to deal with the sacrifices she's made for the sake of her marriage. But, you know, there are also some times where she's very outward about it. And it does kind of create this prickly kind of feeling between her and her husband, because yeah, there are times where she's just like, well, you know what? I've had to give up XYZ and, you know, I'm not going to fold the socks that way. I feel like it's totally warranted for some of the things that she does. And so I felt like that was really, really good representation of her experience and how she didn't kind of shy away from those issues.
And I mean, marriage is difficult no matter what backgrounds you are. And
oh, yeah.
I really appreciated her commenting that if you share the same religion as your spouse and background, that you relate on that level. She makes a lot, there's this article I'm going to link in the show notes, and it's like 7 things I wish more people understood about my arranged marriage, and how she's like, you know, there can be good things about getting married for pragmatic reasons, to, you know, sharing backgrounds can be very helpful in a marriage. And like, just a lot of basic things that really debunk a lot of assumptions that we have about arranged marriage. And that there, you know, I remember I met, when I was younger, when I was about, you know, 12, 13, I met a couple who were very much in love, and they would walk around church. They were visiting and they were from India, and they would walk around church holding hands. And I said, you know, I was talking to them, and she said that her dad had arranged her marriage with her husband. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah. I was like, how does that work? And she says, there's this assumption that because you don't love your spouse in the beginning, that you will never fall in love with them. But she says, you often fall in love with your spouse after you get married.
Mm.
And she really blew my mind about what arranged marriage was. Like, what? And they obviously were so much in love. They were a middle-aged couple. They had kids.
Yeah.
They would walk around, like, the hands holding and, like, all this stuff. And I'm like, you're so physically affectionate. Like, and she said, you know, in theory, if you're, you know, my dad asked me.
Yeah.
There's this really great guy in this college that he runs. Like, he loved him. Would you consider him? She met him, she talked to him, and there was this whole process. And that's another assumption that Huda discusses, is like, we think arranged marriage is a forced marriage, but often it's just like matchmaking.
Yes. I think that was mainly her parents' story as well, right? They didn't know each other very well. And then, you know, they kind of learned to love each other later on in their marriage. And I think that was something that her mom conveyed to her, saying, you know, there's going to be bumps in the road, but, you know, I think she was very confident that her and Hadi could work out their differences, because it was something that her and her, husband had done together as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that, like, Huda's mom and dad were very different in age. And that was one of the things that the mom had emphasized, like, because Huda does struggle in her marriage in the beginning. And so her mom's like, but you're around the same age, so I thought you'd be okay.
Right.
And it was sort of like, mm-hmm. the problems that she had, her mom experienced in her marriage, she thought would be solved by having a closer in age marriage, but they're just a whole new set of problems.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting that, you know, she kind of mentions that because her and Hadi grew up in the same community and they were the same religion, you know, there wouldn't be a lot of issues when it came to their religion. And it turned out that Hadi was just a lot more strict about some of the rules. And it was very just eye-opening that even though you can be in the same community and everything, the way that you're brought up and the way your parents interpret things is kind of going back to the parents kind of being the mentors for these types of things, you know, can really influence your interpretation of the religion and how you practice. And she realized early on in their marriage that they practiced and were thought very differently about kind of the rules around things. And it caused, yeah, another set of hurdles that were kind of unexpected that, you know, Huda never really thought would be an issue.
And I I keep thinking about this scene where they're on their honeymoon and she wants to wear a bathing suit because she's married now. And like, you know, he's the one that'll be watching her and there's like naked people running around in Europe. And she's like, you know,
I'm she's like, it's not a big deal.
Right. It's like, whatever. And she says at the time, like they didn't have Muslim bathing costumes at, you know, when she got married. So, but Hadi views their bodies as just for themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, hers is for him and he's is for her. And so that he should also be modest for his wife. And it was just very interesting, like his interpretation of modesty.
Right. Well, he was, I feel like that the thing that surprised me and I think Huda as well was when she's picking her wedding gown, she invited, you know, other female, like her mom and her mother-in-law, everything to come and see her try on dresses. And Hadi had mentioned that he didn't want her changing in front of the other women that were attending the appointment. And she was like, why not? Like, women like change in front of each other all the time. Like, we all have the same, you know, body parts. And he was like, well, now that we're betrothed, like, your body is, you know, only for my eyes to see. And I was like, oh, wow, that is not how I would have interpreted the situation. And she was also surprised. She was like, oh, well, you know, that doesn't really matter to me. Like, we're all, you know, I'm not letting any other man see my body, but like, women are fine. And it was just another very instance of this clash that was not only surprising, I think, to me as a reader, but was also surprising to Huda, and something that she wouldn't have thought of, but because of this, the interpretation of, you know, values was very different between her and her fiance.
Yeah. So obviously we were really fascinated by this book for multiple different reasons. And I feel like, you know, Sumaya, one of our contributors, and I have a lot of conversations about conservative religion and practicing and some of the things, misconceptions that she wished Westerners would understand. And I feel like this book tackles so much of that. There's so many different things. This is, again, a disclaimer, you know, just a story from a singular person's perspective. Mm-hmm. But it's still so many valuable things to learn if you are not a conservative Muslim person and wanting to learn more about that.
Absolutely. I learned a lot. And yeah, definitely keeping in mind that it's one person's experience and they, you know, aren't expected to speak for their entire population. But I found it very intriguing and I learned so much and definitely want to dive into more books kind of about the conservative religious aspects of being Muslim. And it, I think, was a really good first book for me to pick up and learn more about it.
And in April, we will be talking more about Muslim fiction in particular with Ramadan Reading. And Sumaya has got your back.
Yes. I'm so excited.
I've seen her book lists and they're fabulous. So listeners, you have so much to look forward to. But yeah, so this is a first taste of that. And so that is First Comes Marriage by Huda Al-Marashi. And that's out from Prometheus Books. And you should definitely go check that out if you haven't already. And that's it. That's our month, our first month.
Yay!
You recorded your first two podcasts. How do you feel?
I feel great. I just love talking about books. So I hope that if my comments can kind of spur someone to add a book to their TBR or to pick it up from the library, I feel like that is a mission accomplished for me. So hopefully comments were helpful, but I just love talking books and I love talking with Kendra. So it's a two for one.
Oh, well, thank you. I love talking with you. I feel like we could have talked about both of these books for an hour each. Yes. but we have gone a little over time. So that is it for today. That's our show. But many thanks to our patrons who support make this podcast possible. If you're interested in becoming one of our patrons, definitely check out our website. If you haven't yet, please leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. And thanks to all of you who have already left us a review. And also definitely check out our newsletter where we have new books and reviews and so much more. You can find our newsletter, a link to our Patreon page, and all of the things on our website, readingwomenpodcast.com.
Join us next time, where Jacqueline and Kendra will be talking from Australia and the surrounding archipelago. In the meantime, you can find Reading Women on Instagram and Twitter at The Reading Women. You can find Kendra at Katie Winchester and me on Instagram at Saatchi Reads. Thanks so much for listening to The Reading Women.